This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and we have a huge author today. It's hard to even introduce her. She's so popular. Mary Higgins Clark. Her new book is called I've Got You Under My Skin. She sold like 100 million copies of her books all over the United States and all over the world. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, David, and how are you?
I am fine. It is always a pleasure to talk to you. You are like the nicest human being alive. You really are, and people say, oh, he's just saying that because he's interviewing. But I've met you, and I know what you're like. I mean, I've met you in numerous book signings, and you're always the same, Mary. You're always a sweet person.
Well, I have never been someone who takes pleasure in offending someone or in acting as though I'm terribly important, because we all know how the celebrity business comes and goes, you know?
Right.
And I'm happy that I give pleasure to people with my books, and I enjoy writing them.
April would never be the same without your books. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, every April we see a new book by you. Now, is that in your contract that you have to, you do it every April?
Well, you see, my contract is that I turn the book in by the 31st of December so they can have it for April. And I've been trying, you know, I've been keeping up with that through rain and snow and sleet.
Right. But the good thing is you can do it all from your house, though.
Oh, that's the joy of it, of course. And upstairs, I have, on the third floor of the house, I have an office. And it has a little kitchenette with it, and it has a restroom. And so when I'm really, really, really busy, I can just go up there and shut myself off from the world.
Oh, what a nice thing to be. Now, they call you the Queen of Mystery, so you're almost like royalty, and it feels like I'm talking to royalty.
Oh, dear God. An Irish Catholic girl from the Bronx.
That's right. Now, this new book, I've Got You Under My Skin, I love the cracked glasses on the cover. I mean, now this concerns like a reality. There's like two murders in this book.
I haven't counted, but I think that's right.
Yeah. There's like two concurring stories, which is I love when there's a subplot in a book. When you just have one plot, sometimes it gets a little boring. The subplot makes it a little bit more interesting.
Well, in my first writing class at NYU, and it was about short stories, but it holds the same, there should be a main story, and there should be another that blends in with that one, unexpectedly perhaps. And you solve the minor plot first, and then the major.
Right, exactly. So there's a way to do this. I'm always fascinated when I read a book, how an author constructs a novel. I mean, when you sit down and you first write the first word, I mean, do you know everything that's going to happen before you write a word?
Oh, Lord, no. It's as though I'm going from New York to California, and I don't know whether I'll go by way of the South or way of the North. The first 50 pages are by far the hardest, because you're creating people out of the nothing. You're figuring out how they look, and you know the main plot. I know the main plot, but I don't know all the little others that will come in on it and not only invade it, but become part of it. So I know that this is what happened, and I know who did it and why. Mm-hmm. And then I get going.
And then you get going. So it's sort of like you're feeling your way, just like the reader is when he reads the book.
Yes, to a great extent I'm feeling my way. And I will change the names of some people and think, no, he's not a Joe or a Stuart, he's this. And I begin to visualize the people. What do they look like? What are they wearing? Because that's all part of the plot, because, you know, if you have someone who has a tailored look all the time, as opposed to someone who has a short skirt and red stockings and zip-up boots, you're talking about two people, because that's an extension of their personality. So what they're wearing and their manner of dress is part of that I must know about.
Right, exactly. You, as the writer, you have to know everything. I mean, people think, "Oh, I could write a book; it's easy." But I mean, you think when you read as much as I read, you realize it cannot be easy to write a book. It cannot. It's not that you sit down and the words come flowing out of you. You know, you really have to give every word a thought.
Every word, and I write and I rewrite those 50 pages, and then the characters start to move on their own, and I'll say to them, "Wait a minute, you don't belong in this scene." They say, "I belong in this, but I'm not going to talk like that in the next scene." And that's when writing is really a joy. I've broken through to know the people.
I mean, when you hear writers talk about editing and they have to write a book, you know, they have to go through the book over and over and over. By the time it's done, they've read through it so many times that they must almost be sick of it because they've read
so many. Well, I'll tell you, because I had shingles in the fall, and they really held me up because I was in misery.
Oh.
So I was behind, you know, in the deadline. And by the end of the book, I did get it in, and of course it came out when they wanted it to come out. But I could not read that book. I have not reread it in book form yet.
Oh, really?
I memorize the damn thing.
Well, how long does shingles last when you have it? I mean, is it a month-long illness? I mean, or is it just a...
No, mine was 3 months. And
3 months? Wow.
And I had the shingles shot, just for your information.
Wow, I'm sorry. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Oh, I feel fine now.
Nothing stops you from writing a book. I mean, we would never survive without your books. I mean, seriously, it's something I look forward to every year, and millions of people do. And that must be a great feeling.
Well, it's a lovely feeling. And, of course, you don't take it for granted in the sense that my editor told me 35 years ago, "Mary, you could write the phone book once." And that's exactly the way I feel, because if you just toss together a book and throw it out and think your name will carry it, it's not true. I mean, people may read that book and then say, you know, it's not the same as the others, but so-and-so is really good. So you really do not take readers for granted, ever.
I have to ask you, this book concerns a reality program. Do you watch a lot of reality TV?
No.
I don't either. I mean, are we the only two that don't watch it?
I don't know, but I think they're silly.
What do you watch on TV when you sit down? I'm curious.
Well, I love to go to the classic movies, you know, the ones that I didn't see because I was too busy with 5 kids. And I love some of the series that, you know, are really excellent. And the news programs, I'm very into them.
Who do you think, it probably is not a very good question to ask because there's so many writers out there, but I'm curious if there's somebody that you think is one of the best mystery writers out there.
Oh, gosh, there's so... Well, of course, David Baldacci, Marlon Cove now, who's a close friend and lives a mile away.
I love his books.
He's excellent.
It's interesting how some writers just speak to you. Some writers, you read and you just love every word they write.
I do. Susan Isaacs is wonderful.
Right.
I mean, she is a great writer. But I could start spilling them off, you know?
Right. And the problem is, if you forget somebody, you're going to hear about it. You don't want to leave anybody out. There's so many of them. I mean, and when you...
Well, I'll do a quick story about Harlan. When he was 21, his grandfather owned a very successful and big travel agency, and I guess the family thought he was going to take it over, but he was working in it when he was 21. He gave my brother-in-law a copy of the book he had written, because my brother-in-law was in the travel business, and he said, "I know your sister-in-law is Mary Higgins Clark. Do you think you would let her read this?" And Ken opened the book, and I'm afraid there were some four-letter words on the first page, and he handed it back. He said, "No, Harlan."
Really? How interesting.
Oh, that's been the joke between us, because I never use four-letter words or sex in the books, you know, on camera. But we laugh over it now.
There's a very creepy thread in the first few pages of this book. This is the Laurie Moran story, mystery part of it, and I thought that was interesting, but, or the person that kills her husband, I should say.
that he had heard what he shouted, but the little boy, 3 years old, had twisted in the swing so he could see him, and all he got, the only impression he got, was blue eyes. Blue eyes shot my daddy.
Right.
Him known as the Blue Eyes Murder.
You always make something memorable like that happen in your books, and it helps the reader. I mean, the reader thinks, "Well, now I have to know what happens. I have to know how this story turns out." And that's when you open your books. That's what we always want to know: who's going to be the villain? Who's in the background?
What's going on?
Right. Now,
well, again, in that first class, I learned all I needed to know about writing, and that was to always leave them wanting to read the next chapter. So that's why I always end it, or as best I can, on a hook, so that you want to know what happens. I, the greatest compliment you could possibly pay me is I read your darn book till 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was exhausted the next day. I said, that's wonderful. That's what you paid to get, a suspense ride that you have to stay with until it ends.
And that joy that a reader gets when there's a book that they're really enjoying and they don't want to put it down. They don't even want to go to work. They want to sit home and read the book all day. We've all felt that way at some point. But that's such a great joy. And I think to myself, the people that don't read, I think, what they're missing out on. You know, you're missing out on that wonderful joy that you feel.
Well, Barbara Bush, whom I traveled with a lot when she was so active and still is, of course, in books and getting kids to read. But I sent her the last one, and she said, "Dear Mary, I was packing for Kennebunkport, and I sat down and finished your book instead."
what a compliment that is. I mean,
oh, it's wonderful. But she is wonderful, of course, and so is Laura. The two of them were some first ladies, I'll tell you that.
Right. And you know, I think of books, and it's funny when a book really says something to you, you really... I remember being sick a few years ago, and I was reading a book by, I think his name is Michael Robotham. I think he's an English writer. And that book got me through my sickness, because I was so involved with the story that it made me feel better.
Well, you forget the aches and pains. I know one woman in France wrote to me, "I'm a single mother, my little boy is 4 years old, and he has leukemia." And she said, "I sat by his bedside without leaving for 6 weeks, and your books got me through it." And she said, "Now he is fine, he has recovered, and he's home." So
that's powerful stuff. That brings a tear to my eye just thinking about it. I mean, it's an emotional thing. I mean, that your book could help her get through that great of an experience. I mean, that life-changing experience for her is amazing.
Well, I was so thrilled that the little boy has recovered.
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful, because we all know that can be deadly, you know. But the idea that I helped her get through it, I was delighted.
Has writing always been a joy for you?
Yes.
Always?
And right now, as we speak, we got all finished with the galleys and everything in February, and Michael Carter, my editor, phoned about 2 weeks later, and he said, "Mary, we must have a quiet lunch and talk about the new book." I said, "I will throw something at you, Michael." I need to clear my brain. But now, and I did the things I've been wanting to do, you know, clean out the closets, do all the things you put off all the time.
Right.
Now I'm itching to open the book again.
Wow. How do you have trouble naming your characters?
Oh, sure. You know what I do? We go to a lot of charity dinners, and I keep the book that they give you with the names in. I have them for years, where I will mix names from the guest list. You know, they might have 100 names on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, this one is the first name, and that one is the last name. That's good.
And I think the figures, you've written, is it 42 books now?
45, my dear. Don't
45, mind. Wow. Well, Wikipedia is not updated then.
They separate them from the novels, the collections, the memoirs, the George Washington book, and the five by Jabez Carroll.
Right, exactly. So I shortchanged your three. I'm sorry. I had no idea.
Mea culpa, mea culpa.
That's right. I mean, and has each, were there some that were more difficult than others to write?
Yes.
And why do you think that is?
Well, remember me, I started 30 years ago, and my agent read the first 100 pages, and she said, it doesn't work, stop writing it. And then I tried 10 years later, and I realized, I can't write this book, I'm doing something wrong. And then, I guess it was 15 years ago, Michael Corder said, I want you to write a book with a psychological background. I said, Michael, I have tried for a generation and I can't seem to write it. He said, well, tell me about it. And what he said was, you need a present-day suspense story going against the background of the other one. And I said, bingo. And that book was, they're all successful, I guess, but Remember Me, I thought it was a pretty good book.
And I remember that book. You know, I can still, to this day, remember seeing that little mitten on the cover of Where Are the Children?
Well, isn't it funny? Wendell Miner and I have become great friends. He's coming for lunch tomorrow with his wife.
Wow.
And I feel that red mitten was so compelling. And nobody knew who I was from Adam because, you know, it was my first suspense story. And I've always felt, in fact, when that book came out, my friend who just seemed to know everything, and she said, first, you must buy the painting for the book. You must do that. And I said, okay. And I bought it, almost 40 years ago.
Wow.
And Wendell said, yes, but I would want to have the opportunity to have, when I have a collection shown, to put it in the collection. And from, and when we display it, we will have under it, from the collection of Mary Higgins Clark. And I said, Wendell, drop the from. This is the collection of Mary Clark.
And that book's now, I think, in its 75th printing, something like that. That's what I read online.
It's just, yes, and it's still reprinted all over the world.
Oh, in fact, all of your books are in print.
As far as I know, yes. And what they do is they put the paperback of that book out again regularly with a new cover.
I like the idea of a bunch of people getting together after all these years, and there was a murder years ago, and nobody knows who did it then, and we get to discover who did it. It's kind of like, it's an interesting point to the book.
Well, when Michael suggested the title, I've Got You Under My Skin, I was already writing the book, but I thought, I see what he means, getting under the skin of people. But you know when, well, as you know, the plot is four young women just graduated from college and very good friends are given a wonderful gala as a celebration for all of them. They all stay in the house, the mansion in Westchester, that night, and one of the girls, it's her stepfather's, and her mother, beautiful Betsy, whom everybody looks up to, every one of them has a reason to want to kill her. They absolutely despise her, and all with very good reason. And then beautiful Betsy is found smothered overnight when her husband goes in with the coffee for her. And I thought, that's an interesting premise. But the other part, how about being under suspicion of murder from the time you're 21 until they all get together again 20 years later? But how about opening the paper and there is a rehash and the picture of the four young girls looking as though they were mugshots, and to wake up and see that? And I thought, that's an interesting premise. And the reason they all go back is they all need the money, and they're offered $250,000 with all the taxes paid to go back and tell their stories and their version.
Almost an impossible amount to refuse.
Well, I thought it was a good premise, and I thought, let's go, babe. And there we are.
And it's interesting, it's fascinating to hear how it all comes together in your mind. And as the reader, we're always curious how a story comes together, because the story, when you read a story, it has to make sense, because you got to remember that when the reader opens the book, it has to engage them right away. If it doesn't, they're going to close the book and never open it again.
Well, you know, if you get 20 pages of description of the beautiful countryside where the main character is, you really don't care. You want to know what's happening on that beautiful countryside. You've got to get something. Well, you know, the joke is, the best line ever written was, a shot rang out in the night.
Exactly. Right away you have an idea in your head of what...
Who died? Who did the shooting? Sure, you want to know what happened.
Exactly. So the reader wants to turn that page to find out what happened, just like a TV show when they want to see what's going to happen next.
Exactly. Well, you know, if there's an accident on the highway, everybody in the other lane is rubbernecking, and you have and the traffic piles up. But just because they're slowing down and trying to see what happened, it's inevitable.
I love that we can see flowers on the back of your book. I've always been into flowers. I assume you have a wonderful garden there where you live in New Jersey.
It's very pretty. We have 4.5 acres, and it really is a very pretty area.
Do you ever write outside in your garden?
Sometimes I do. You know, in the patio behind the house, and it's just pretty. I love the house. And think of the first house, which I love. I still remember Walnut Street with just great love, because some of the children were born there. I guess Carol and Patty were born there. When I was pregnant with Carol, that I sold my first short story for $100.
And you have a good memory, too. You remember things. I wish, you know, as we get older sometimes, the memories aren't as easy to come by sometimes, some of us.
Don't we know it. But it's a funny thing. You can grope for a word, you know. You know what I was groping for last week?
What's that?
Wouldn't you ask, and I wouldn't look up, the name of the piazza in Venice. And I wouldn't look. And finally I said to my husband, what is a piazza? He said, St. Mark's. I said, of course. I can remember someone dancing me across it years ago. I was darned if I was going to look it up, but finally I gave up. But that happens to all of us, I think.
And it's so frustrating, too, because you think, I know it. I mean, as soon as I hear it, I know I'm going to, that's it. But it just will not come to the front of your brain. It's like it's...
Front. And most times, you know, an hour later you'll say, oh, it was Jane who said that kind of thing.
Do you ever get frustrated writing?
I wouldn't say the word is frustrated. I would say more that I know this isn't working, or I can't get across right now what I'm trying to convey. You know, under my skin, I have 4 different personalities, very strong ones, in the suspects. And I think, of course, they have to be different. You have to be able to soothe them, you know, and what has happened to them in life as who they are when they come to that house and once again go over the murder.
Right.
I thought, you know, they're just different people, and that's very important. When you, after a few chapters, you have to know who is Claire and who is this one and who is that one.
It reminds me of the scene at the end of a lot of mystery programs where they gather everybody in the same room and they reveal the killer. I always found those scenes fascinating.
Oh, yes. I think it is fascinating.
I mean, you've got the killer in there, and the killer knows that he's going to be... he or she knows they're going to be revealed. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, when you're thinking...
It's getting to the point where everything is falling back to that one person, and how do you react to it?
It's sort of like Perry Mason. When you used to watch Perry Mason, you'd have he always put the one that was guilty on the stand at the end of the program, so you knew the last person on the program was going to be the killer.
Well, Agatha Christie, remember, and then they were none.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, she was a master at fooling people, you know, turning you. I want people to be reading my book. And, of course, near the end, some people will say, aha, she's the one or he's the one. And another will be so sure that it's a different person that they say, you had me fooled. And I'm secretly happy if I manage to fool you.
And that makes me ask about clues. You always leave clues in your books.
Oh, and you must. You must have some readers say, this isn't important, but this is. You've got to be fair to the reader. You can't, at the end of it, say, and then the mailman happened to be coming, and he saw this one. I mean, you know, you can't do that stuff.
No, yeah, and you can't bring a character that's a killer out of nowhere at the end of the book and say, well, here's the killer, but you didn't know him the whole book. This is unfair to the...
That's a waste.
It is. And, you know, the reader wants to think that they had met the person in the book, so they know a little bit about the person, but they just had no idea they were a killer.
Or maybe they had a fleeting thought. That sounds funny, you know? And then gone on to some other person. That's what a good writer tries to do, is to make it both enjoyable and also make the reader a detective following it to the end. Or saying to herself or himself, I don't like the sound of that. Or, I don't think she's honest when she says that. And just looking for the killer.
It's fascinating in mysteries where you have the detective following the clues, and I'm always fascinated by how the writers do it, because it's, you know, it can be very dull very easily. You have to make it interesting somehow. Somehow the detective has a backstory. They drink or whatever they do. You know, that makes the story much more interesting. I mean, the fact that they're in danger themselves. The Inspector Morse. Inspector Morse always drank a lot, you know, but he always solved the crime. You know, but there's always that backstory with the detective that's so fascinating. I mean, what do they have that connects them to the story, and how are they dealing with their problems on top of trying to solve the mystery?
Well, you know, it's funny, David. I want to be authentic, so I have two retired detectives whom I hire when I'm doing something in New York City.
Huh.
And for example, in the last book, I have one of them going to the school with the college where the babysitter had to talk to the babysitter who had lost the child in the park. And my detectives, when I showed them that chapter, one of them called me absolutely indignant. He said, Mary, first of all, detectives do not carry umbrellas. They might need to reach for a gun. Secondly, we do not walk between one place and another. We have a car.
Oh.
And what was the third? And third, we travel in pairs. We do not look up and interview just one person. So I said, oh, thanks. And of course, I changed it. But if a detective had read it as I did it, he would say she doesn't know what she's talking about.
I would assume being a detective like they are, it would spoil books for them. If they picked up a book and there was something that was so blatantly wrong for them, it would kind of ruin the effect of the book. I mean, when you are a detective yourself, you look for something that doesn't seem right in a book. I would think that would affect their reading.
Well, a knowledgeable reader. We just say, it's baloney, you know. Detectives don't do that. So I've had them in, and in fact, the last book, what was it, Daddy's Gone Hunting.
Right, which I really loved.
Thank you. It's number one on the paperback right now, the mass market, for the last 2 weeks.
That's great.
Yeah, I love it. But I hired a retired fire marshal.
Yeah, and your covers are always so pretty, too. You always have beautiful covers. And like I was saying before about the glasses, the broken glasses, I don't even know how they come into play in the story yet. I'm still experiencing the story. But, you know, every little, you look at the, and you think, well, what do the broken glasses mean?
Well, it's significant to someone rather than, you know, you'll find a broken glass in it. But I think that the head writer is absolutely one. No, head. I don't know what that is. God help us. I don't know. Do you hear me? I'm quitting up.
Yeah.
Take that out. I'm looking at the phone ringing, which should not come through my phone.
Right.
But anyhow, the head of the art department in Simon & Schuster is simply wonderful. And they will send me a sample cover, and I will approve it or say, I think maybe this. And I guess a few books ago was the only one that I didn't much like. And I can't tell you what it was at the moment.
Right. It's that memory problem again. We all have, even young people have that same memory problem. So it's not just any age you can have a problem with your memory.
Oh, no, but there's no question. As you get older, it doesn't snap to your head.
Right, exactly. Now, do you have a title for your next book already?
No.
Not yet.
But we are doing, this book is the basis for a series where Alasair Berk, who is a wonderful writer, she and I will write it together.
Oh, really?
Yes. It will be out in the fall.
You've never, I mean, you've done it with your daughter, but have you ever done it with another writer that wasn't related to you?
No, but, and I will always have my own book in the spring.
Right.
But this would, if it's successful, be the series we call it the Under Suspicion series.
Oh, really?
Where Laurie and her two assistants, Gracie and Justin, and of course, Alex, you know, the criminal defense lawyer,
mm-hmm.
they will be doing the same thing.
Oh,
for instance, the next one is going to be the Cinderella murder.
Oh, wow. That's exciting. I had no idea. Didn't hear anything about that.
Well, I have always decided, except for our Christmas books with Carol, that I wouldn't co-author a book. But I decided that Alasair is a wonderful writer, and I will be putting the human interest part in it, because I think we'll make a very good team.
Carol's still writing her Reagan Riley series?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, she's working on one right now, where a class reunion that Reagan goes to turns very sour.
I suppose we'll see that next year sometime.
Yes, she took a year off. She said, I just got to clear my head.
That happens to all of us. We all need to get out and get some fresh air and enjoy our life. We have a life, too, you know?
Also have a life. Even writers have a life.
Right. Well, we have to let you go. I think I've used up more time than I was scheduled to use up. But it's always a joy to talk to you, Mary. I feel like you're family. I mean, you really are such a sweet lady. And
I feel the same way. And it's great to talk with you, David. One of my favorite names. I have a son, David, a grandson, David. John has a son, David, and a grandson, David. So, as you can see, David is a very highly popular name.
Right, exactly. Okay, the book again is called I've Got You Under My Skin, the 45th novel by Mary Higgins Clark. Did they get more popular than you? I don't think so. This has been a great joy, and this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
Righto. Take care, Dave.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.